This is Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. And it's the third day of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. In case anyone forgot, today's theme, Make America First Again. Last night, the party made Donald Trump their official presidential nominee. His eldest son spoke admiringly about him as a businessman and a father. But for most of the speeches, the striking common theme that tied all the speakers together was the venom they directed against Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie used his time to lead in call and response indictment of Hillary Clinton.
In China and Syria, in Iran and Russia and Cuba, and here at home for risking America's secrets to keep her own and lying to cover it all up.
Another former presidential candidate, neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson, tried to link Clinton to the devil.
So are we willing to elect someone as president who has as their role model somebody who acknowledges Lucifer? Think about that.
Even Donald Trump Jr. devoted a couple lines in a speech ostensibly about his dad to attacking Clinton.
If Hillary Clinton were elected, she'd be the first president who couldn't pass a basic background check.
Joining us now from Cleveland to help us understand what we're hearing is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Indira. How are you?
Good. So negative campaigning is nothing new in American politics, but this year's convention seems really striking for how much, let's call it what it is, hate the speakers and the audience are directing against Hillary Clinton. Why is the RNC focusing so much on her as bad rather than promoting Donald Trump as good?
I mean, I think it's a great question. I mean, one of the things that's going on here in this convention so far is I think it's still struggling to sort of articulate a message about the future, right? I mean, it's also a significantly divided convention with lots of delegates, Speaker Paul Ryan as well, offering less than full-throated endorsements of their party's candidate. I mean, don't forget, I mean, this was a historic win for Donald Trump last night, but 721 delegates cast ballots for someone other than Trump. That's the most divided that a convention has been since 1976. But the big theme that everyone can agree on is they don't want to see Hillary Clinton elected president. So that's really what stirs the passion. And in general, you know, what you're hearing from the delegates is these are the moments in the convention that they're really excited about. That's when they're expressing their most passion and when they're the most unified. So I think that's one of the things that's going on here.
So the message is red meat for the base, but it's also the way to unify the party. Okay. Well, yesterday's theme was supposed to be Make America Work Again, but we didn't hear too many specifics on job creation. Today's theme is Make America First Again. Who's speaking and what actually are they going to focus on?
Well, two big focuses today. The first is Indiana Governor Mike Spence. Big night for him. Trump's running mate. He's got a chance here to really rally core conservatives. It's an important opportunity for him and other core conservatives to show them that this Republican Party isn't only the party of Trump. And that's something that I think a lot of Republicans are uneasy about. The other big appearance will be by Texas Senator Ted Cruz. And, of course, he was a big rival of Trump's during the primary. He's been given a primetime speaking spot. It's going to be fascinating to hear him because we expect him to present what he does, and that's a much more orthodox conservative vision than Trump. So I think one of the big themes emerging this week, and I think it'll continue tonight, is the way this party is divided. And in many ways, Cruz represents the conservative wing of that divided party.
All right. Well, you've got an update for us, too, on the controversy over Melania Trump's speech, borrowing lines from Michelle Obama. Tell us in the 30 seconds or so we have left what's happened since we spoke about this yesterday.
Well, this continues to be a huge embarrassment for the Trump campaign. I mean, one of the issues that the Trump folks wanted to demonstrate was Trump's ability to take care of business, get things done. Instead, we've learned that Melania's speech, this is what we've learned, that they employed professional speech writers, but then Melania Trump overruled them and rewrote the speech with one of her staffers. That's Meredith McIver. Now, today, Meredith McIver admitted that she goofed. She took the blame. She offered to resign. The Trump folks said, no, you don't have to resign. But, you know, this represents the kind of breakdown in discipline and process that represents the kind of weakness that some folks fear is endemic of the Trump organization's campaign, Trump campaign's organization. Because, you know, they say these are the kinds of mistakes that should not have been made. Vet the speech, write the speech, make sure it's not cribbing from people.
But, well, I was also struck that Meredith McIver in her apology letter actually said that Melania Trump read her some passages from Michelle Obama over the phone because Michelle Obama was someone that Melania has liked and admired for a long time. And then she, the speechwriter, took the, you know, fell on her sword and took the blame for not checking and making sure they weren't word for word. But really
exactly
fascinating.
Right.
Thank you so much for bringing us up to date. We will be waiting to hear more from you tomorrow with bated breath. That's WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Thanks so much, Anthony.
My pleasure, Indira.
So it's an interesting moment for Republicans as they face some divisions within the party. It reminded us of a similar moment back in 1980 when the party was reeling from the Watergate scandal. At the 1980 convention, the party nominated Ronald Reagan to challenge incumbent president Jimmy Carter. And that November, the GOP came from behind to recapture not only the White House, but also the Senate majority and 49 more House seats. The man credited with that dramatic turnaround nearly 40 years ago was the party's chairman, former Tennessee Senator Bill Brock. We spoke with him today to hear about the parallels between the Republican Party's moment of crisis then and what it's facing now.
We were trying to come back from a disaster called Watergate, in which we were embarrassed by the dumping of a vice president, the resignation of a president, and we frankly had lost touch with the American people. We just simply were sort of wandering in the wilderness, and frankly, as we worked through the Carter years, not only the party, but the people of this country were struggling. We were running into huge economic problems. The frustration on the part of most Americans was very deeply rooted. And what we were trying to do as a party was to turn it around for ourselves first and then for the country. So we had to focus on who we had not been connecting with, mostly blue-collar workers, women, and young people. So that's why we chose Detroit. We were trying literally to make the Republican Party a complete party again, an inclusive party.
And you specifically were looking at women, African Americans, blue-collar workers that traditionally had voted Democrat. And, of course, your GOP candidate that year for president, Ronald Reagan, succeeded in doing that. But today, Donald Trump has appealed to a base of largely white working class voters who seem to fear dislocation in a culture that is changing. And Trump has been accused of scapegoating Latinos, Muslim Americans, African Americans, and even women at the expense of those in his base. I wonder, when you watch that, do you worry about the GOP losing that big tent that you were able to build in 1980?
Yeah, and the truth is I worry about something even bigger. I think both parties have lost touch again. If you look at the American people, and it's not just white males who are uneducated, the discontent in this country, the worry that we're off on the wrong track, runs for 2 out of every 3 Americans. That's a huge number, and it scares the dickens out of me. I think it is really important for a political party to be completely inclusive. You cannot build a party by being exclusive. It doesn't work. If you're not representing the majority of Americans across every kind of component of the population, you're not doing your job.
And, of course, the majority of America is heading in a direction demographically where in the not-too-distant future it is going to be majority-minority, quote-unquote. And I think, you know, I wonder if that's something, as you look at the party that you love, do you worry that Donald Trump is going for those white working-class voters at the expense of a very large part of the population?
I don't think that there has been near enough emphasis this year on the part of the Republican leadership, the candidates, on what we need to be doing to make very sure that black Americans, young Americans, women, feel comfortable about associating with us. We ought to be talking about jobs in the black community, Hispanic community. We ought to be talking about jobs to young people who are coming out of college and having to live at home because they can't get a really decent job. Those are issues that ought to be right in the front of everything we say as Republicans, and our candidates have got to do that if we're going to reflect the interests of this country and, frankly, if we're going to grow back to being a majority again. I don't think social issues ought to be part of a platform. We can say, as Republicans, we say we believe in small government. Well, that means we do, except in the case of trying to intervene in somebody's life choices.
All right, well, let me ask you, of course, in 1980, you had the advantage as the RNC chairman of having as your front man, your candidate for president, Ronald Reagan, a sunny, attractive, former movie star and governor who is credited so much with revitalizing the American conservative movement. His slogan was, of course, "Let's make America great again," very similar to Trump's battle cry. But Reagan seemed to exude optimism and a hopeful energy, while Trump appears to be tapping into resentment and anxiety among his supporters about this country being in a very dark place. I wonder your reflections on that and whether you think that's risky for the party you love.
Well, I don't want it to be totally different. I mean, Reagan was a happy warrior. He really was a sweet, giving, loving, caring man. You know the story. It's the time that he worked with Tip O'Neill, that good old Boston Paul that led the Democrats, and you know those two would get together and have a beer and tell Irish jokes. They didn't spend a week without talking to each other. And Reagan's genius was, I think, in being open to working with almost anybody to solve the problem. And I think the impression that we've gotten this year is that we're not as open to that sort of thing as we should be.
I have read that you focused in the late 1970s in your role as RNC chairman on direct mail fundraising. It sounds really quaint now to hear those words in the internet era, but those small contributions of $15 and $20 that you collected netted you $45 million in 1980 that you focused largely on local and state elections. So, you know, this year all the media attention has focused on Donald Trump, and Trump has shown very little interest in campaigning with or fundraising for local candidates. So I wonder, is there going to be so much attention on winning the White House that you guys are ignoring the down ballot elections to the peril of the party?
We got to be real careful about that, and that's a fair point. We focused on small gifts because politics then and now was too dependent on big money, and it scares me to death to see the huge amount of money that that individuals can give or PACs without even being known. We don't even know about who's giving to some of these PACs. That's fundamentally wrong, to leave people with the impression that they have not got a voice because the big money people run it all. And that's just terrifically unhealthy for a free society.
So let me ask you, this whole campaign began last fall with 17 candidates vying to be the Republican presidential candidate. We ended up with Donald Trump, but in the meantime, a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of people who supported Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or John Kasich, whose feelings are hurt and who have felt that Trump does not represent them. I wonder, you know, you look at the party you know so well. Do you see it as fracturing now? Do you see it in a whole new era? Or is this just one in a long history of sort of expansions, contractions, internal turmoil that's all going to resolve itself? Which way do you see it going?
I don't know. I think it's the right question. And I worry a lot about it because both parties are in a position where they're recomposing themselves. And if you don't have an inclusive campaign organization or party, you're limiting your ability to change things for the better.
Well, watching it from the incredible historical perspective that you have, if you were advising the party today, and I'm sure in some informal ways you are, what would you think that the best path forward is? And, you know, it sounds like you're concerned about unity or disunity and disagreements. Do you think that Donald Trump has a shot, truly, at winning the White House in November with all of the divisive language you were talking about?
I do. These two parties are really important for the American people. They need two good parties to compete for their vote. And to the extent that Republicans are not fully united, they're not serving a useful purpose. We've got to do better at that. And if I were national chairman, I'd be out recruiting blacks to run into the black community because some white Yaley is going to have a tough time understanding the problems in the black community and being able to communicate in that community to them. You need somebody of the community that speaks to the community and speaks for their values and their concerns.
That's former Tennessee Senator and former Chairman of the Republican National Committee, Bill Brock. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
I enjoyed talking to you, and you have a good day.
Coming up, we'll take your calls on the future of the GOP. You can reach us on 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Stay with us. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is Radio Boston.